You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 28th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. You know what that means? Cliff Schechter will be here with us. Also on the program, giving us a movie recommendation, the best-selling author, and former wife of that cop on SVU, Isabel Gilles. Also on the program today, proof that Mitt Romney's a great guy. Your yacht needs a hand in docking. He's your man. And Bibi Netanyahu draws a picture of a bomb. Not quite the same impact as holding up a vial of talcum powder at the UN, but what are you going to do? That's already been done. And we've said it before, but we'll say it again. More evidence. You're all teeth suckers. Whether you're Republicans or Democrats, you're all sucking off a huge teat that is government. You takers, parasites. But first, we will speak to a man who only gives, ladies and gentlemen. He gives and he gives and he gives more. And so the least we could do is provide for him this theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's the wonderful, lovely Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
Lovely. Wow, I haven't been called that in a while. How are you doing, Sam?
It's a Friday. I'm feeling it.
A giver, though. You're right about that.
You know, you give, and you give some more. And then you say, what more can I give?
Exactly. And it's just the kind of stuff I'm made of, quite frankly.
There you go. Cliff. Now, we could spend our time today talking exclusively about Mitt Romney, but I'm just so – I don't even know what to say.
Don't you wish you were still, like, doing regular stand-up, Sam? I mean, you could do, like, the whole show on Mitt. It's amazing.
I mean, this guy – George Bush, it turns out, is more – has a better net favorability rating at this point than Mitt Romney. So instead of the cavalcade of Mitt Romneyisms that we're seeing, I'm more interested in talking about everything else that is down ballot because this week, you know, let's just change it up for a little bit. I can't wait for this election to be over. And then I know I'm going to be annoyed with what happens after that. But
Then we'll have other things to be angry about.
Indeed. All right. Let's start here. Okay. because there is now we're starting to see the stories about, well, we'll talk about Romney, but sort of as a bank shot, okay? We're starting to see the stories about how Paul Ryan may have been a bad pick from Republicans, right?
Amazing, huh?
And we're starting to, I think it was Byron York in whatever crappy magazine that he writes for.
The Examiner.
Okay, so it was a... Was it a newspaper? I don't know where he writes.
I think it's the Washington Examiner. I think that's where it is.
Oh, maybe that's not such a bad thing. I don't know that Washington
needed after the Washington Times and the Washington Post editorial section. What Washington needed was another conservative newspaper.
Right.
So they added the Examiner in case the other guys missed anything.
There's so much money flowing through the right-wing echo chamber that they literally don't know what to do. I mean, they're like, can we find some other dying industry to pour money into? Is there some other? So he's coming out with this, and this is on the heels of a big poll that says in Florida, Ohio, and Virginia, Medicare rivals the economy as a top voting issue. And by majorities of 70% or more, seniors say they prefer to keep Medicare as a program with guaranteed benefits rather than the here's a voucher program that the Romney Ryan people are pushing.
Right.
This is bad for Mitt Romney, and it also speaks to how bad it is for Ryan, and it's good for those of us who are hoping that Medicare does not get cut in a grand bargain in the fall.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. Like, it's sort of picking Ryan and how they've behaved since then is kind of like fits thematically with this entire campaign that they run, where they sort of jerk from place to place and they don't really know – they don't really have any overall message initially. It was going to be all about the economy. And the truth is that they probably should have stayed on that. Now, they might have lost. But at least that was the issue they wanted to be talking about, where they maybe had a chance. And instead, when they picked Paul Ryan, it was sort of the implication there, because really, why would you pick Paul Ryan for any other reason? I mean, maybe he could teach you how to do the P90X workout and become a dreamboat like him. So there was always that potential upside. Because I know I haven't read enough stories about his washboard abs. I get pretty excited by those myself. Or perhaps there's something else in the vast repertoire of Paul Ryanism he could have done for you. But it would seem to me that the reason you would pick Paul Ryan is that you're trying to change the debate and have a debate over Medicare, Social Security, entitlements in general, government spending overall, and look at his ridiculous dystopian version of what can be. And debate that. But Romney picked him, and so I think a lot of conservatives get all excited. They're going to have that debate because they're not very smart and think that they would win it. But now Romney in interviews won't even seem to embrace Ryan. Flynn, even more in the 60 Minutes interview, said, well, I'm running for president. He's not, which is always a nice thing to say about your VP. It's maybe why some of those stories have come out about how much they already don't like each other. So, you know, so what was the point then? I mean, if you're going to go risky, you might as well have gone with Marco Rubio. If, you know, as far as I've said that from the beginning, if you want a safe pick, you know, Pawlenty, Portman, those are your guys. If you want a risky pick, at least Marco Rubio brings, you know, brings the Hispanic thing and brings potentially Florida and is a great speaker, you know, and the rest, and is young like Ryan is. Ryan never brought anything to the table. So, you know, except, I don't know, go ahead.
I don't know. I don't know what he brought to the table. He dresses sort of like Mitt Romney. Maybe that's the thing. Byron York was talking about how Portman should have been the pick, that he's really done great in Ohio, and this would have made a difference in Ohio. What's your sense? You're from Ohio.
I said that from the beginning, and I think that is exactly true. There have been a lot of pieces written. There was one in the New Republic. There's one or two of them actually in the New Republic and a few other places that have looked at what's happened in Ohio. And I'll admit it, like, because about 6-9 months when we were talking way back when, I thought Obama was going to have a ton of trouble here. And the reason why he's done so well is surprisingly, he's run a much more, you know, populist campaign than I thought he was going to. They didn't listen on the Bain stuff, and they stayed. I thought they'd get scared away by all the anti, you know, the sort of New Dems and others carping about running against private equity. But to their credit, or at least their super PAC's credit, they kept running these devastating ads here, and they kept on the issue. The bailout also was something I thought they might run away from. I mean, the Republic, you have to remember, that it was different a year ago, and Republicans were attacking them on bailouts, and bailouts failed, and they're socialist. But they didn't. They proudly ran on the bailout here, too, where anywhere between 1 in 6 and 1 in 8 jobs rely on that. So that's the important first thing to say, is there's a reason he's doing so well here, because they've stood up and run the kind of campaign they should run, and talked about things that matter to people. But interestingly, that was Romney did not pick Portman. Portman is hugely popular here. Portman may be a wealthy dude like Romney, who went to Dartmouth and you know was Bush's budget guy, but he has a regular guy thing about him that Romney could never understand or get. Portman is completely comfortable walking into like a pub and sitting down with people wearing, when he wears jeans, it doesn't look like he put them on because he thought that he was supposed to put them on to look like one of the regular people. You know, so I think, with Portman there, look, it still would have been really difficult because of the campaign that Obama has run here, which has been very smart, but they'd be in a much better position. There's no doubt to me that Portman's a much better pick than Paul Ryan.
Give me your sense of, does it make a difference that Paul Ryan, you know, the week started off with a satire story in Politico. It was not very good satire, but the story was, it was a satire piece where supposedly Ryan refers to Romney as the stench, and that whenever he gets a call, whenever, you know, somebody's on the line or Ryan says to his staffers, hey, if the stench calls, tell him I'm in the bathroom or something like that. And
that's right.
This was a satire piece. Now, I have a couple of different theories about it. One is that they probably do have a nickname for Romney that is probably, if not the stench, something maybe worse.
And maybe, that's the way I took it, too.
And maybe Simon was just getting this story out there so that when that story comes out, it looks like that's a satire. But putting aside that notion of it, the fact is that Ryan, there's a very good reason to believe that Romney's going to lose this election in a significant and decisive fashion, and that Ryan goes back into the House as part. What does it do to the politics of the grand bargain? What does it do to the politics in terms of the Tea Party? If Ryan comes off this, how hard will they work to make it not Paul Ryan's fault? And
oh my God. Considering it's like the right wing, you know, I mean, it's interesting that Byron York is jumping off the train, but you have to remember a lot of the conservative, neoconish intelligentsia are the ones who were pushing for Paul Ryan. I mean, Bill Kristol, like, probably has a poster of Paul Ryan working out up on his wall. He loves him so much. So I those guys, I think, are going to defend him. Krauthammer, I think, was a big booster of Ryan's. I don't see those guys, they're going to blame Romney. They're going to try to be. I mean, it seems clear to me if you look at
and Limbaugh. Limbaugh also obviously will blame Romney, right? I mean, Limbaugh.
Yeah, and if you look at this stuff in more grand, sort of long term schemes, they're grooming this guy to be president. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what they want. They want a guy who's young and pleasant enough, you know, doesn't offend. Although Ryan has done a decent job of offending, but that was the hope, to get somebody like that who would do disastrous things to people, but wouldn't seem like he would. So I think they've been grooming this guy for this for a while, and so I think they're going to try to protect him at all costs. I think it'll all be Romney.
But this hurts.
You know.
I mean, it seems to me this's got to hurt, right? I mean, this has got to hurt his bona fides for a national run in the future, it seems to me.
Well, I would think it would, and I would think that there are other Republicans who want to be president who are going to take advantage of that and try to fight back against that narrative and attack him and say that how you know bad he was and the stupid mistakes he made and the rest. So yeah, I would think it would hurt him, and I would think he'd have less leverage going into any kind of negotiations for grand bargains and things of that sort. But you know, we've seen Democrats capitulate in the past to people that had no actual bargaining power.
Oh, no, no, right. I'm not talking. I almost think that the real question is what happens on the right. In other words, does he have to now harden to show that it was not his fault? Does he have to harden? I mean, is he going to be forced to harden his position of no deal at this point? That's my question. Is that because I happen to believe that if there is a grand bargain, we will lose big time. And by we, I mean people who support Medicare and Social Security. So one of the key questions for me is just how intransigent will the right be in those 3 or 4 months and going forward? And does this increase Paul Ryan's need to sort of increase his bona fides with these with the right wing nut jobs?
Well, yeah, I think so, and he does because he wants to be their candidate in 2016, and there are going to be other people who are just as crazy as he is who are going to try to get to his right, and he will, you know, he has to make sure, especially on economic issues, nobody can do that. But also, if you think of, you know, dying movements. And that's what you have here. I'm not claiming the Republican Party overall is dying, but that faction, that old white angry Tea Party faction who is losing power day by day as the demographics of this country are changing, I think they're going to dig in. I don't see them, you know, I mean, crazy people generally don't come to realize they're crazy. Don't say, oh, well, maybe we're being a little too harsh, you know, let's go sit down with Obama, the Kenyan guy. Right. I don't see that changing. And if anything, if a few of these guys go down, and we had said we were going to talk about, you know, the House and the Senate and whatever, I mean, you're looking right now at the potential for both Steve King and Michelle Bachmann, and not to mention Alan West, are all, if polls are to be believed, potentially could go down. So if some of the hardest core right-wing nut jobs go down in the House and the Senate, for that matter, too, what you might get is even more of a sense of being under siege from some of these other guys. Mm. It may make them not easier to deal with, but in fact, it may make them more David Koresh-like to deal with, for lack of a better way of putting it. And I'm joking, but. There's not that many degrees of separation between some of these guys and these crazy militias and whatever. I mean, I don't see any of them pulling out guns on the House floor, but I think that we should all be a little concerned about what's going to happen after this election, because if it goes the way it looks like it's going to go, you now have right-wing media not only feeding people dishonesty about everything from what happens when someone's raped to global warming, evolution, supply-side economics, and virtually everything else that's provable through math, science, and the rest. But they're feeding people, they're telling people that all these polls have a liberal bias to them, and that there's mass voter fraud out there, which the only I've only seen voter fraud so far among that Republican group that just got fired for committing voter fraud. But they're going to make it out. It's the new Black Panthers, man. They're coming to get you. So what happens with these crazy lunatic guys, you know, huddled up in their place with their cans of Spam and their guns? I don't know. It's disconcerting. I think you're going to see the emotional level even go further up. So you've got the crazy thugs on the street, but then you've also got these crazy guys in the House who, I think, you know, I mean, this collection of Tea Party guys, they've never lived in reality.
You know, that poll thing is really interesting because there is – I don't know if people have been really paying attention to this, but there seems to be a concerted effort on the right now to argue that all the polls are completely wrong. And it's not just that they're wrong. It's that there is a conspiracy, like you mentioned, to make it seem like there's no enthusiasm for Romney – So that Romney's losing, so to dampen Republican turnout, and so they're coming up with a whole litany of sort of reasons why that have nothing to do with a rejection of Republicanism, conservatism, to explain what they're perceiving is going to be the outcome of this election. So you've got, you know, there's a conspiracy to undercount Romney's support, to further dampen Romney's support. It's Paul Ryan's fault. We see this. It should have been Portman. by Byron York. We're going to then hear also, as we get closer to the election or right after the election, it's going to be all Romney wasn't conservative enough. That's really right. The real reason, because, of course, we're going to hear this from people who are essentially in the cottage industry of making this argument.
Right. Well, conservatism, I think, and I've heard others say this. I'm trying to think if it's our friend Digby who says this, or there's others, but conservatism can never fail. It can only be failed.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's really what you're going to see come out of this. Who failed conservatism? Who failed? I mean, you know, we're a center-right country after all, wink, wink, right? So, I mean, somebody must have screwed something up that the people didn't get it. So that's it. You're right. And there is a cottage industry because there's a lot of people. I mean, there's a whole right-wing entertainment complex where people make where talk radio hosts and idiotic authors and others people make millions of dollars off of just saying things they know to be demonstrably untrue, but they make money off of it. So it's going to be in there to their advantage to argue that if only that the polls were lying and that something was stolen and conservatism was failed and this, that, and the other way. I mean, you know, we're probably not telling anybody anything they don't know here. I remember the raft of ridiculous books and articles and things, and, you know, after Obama was elected, and that's when really a lot of some of the birtherism kicked into high gear.
Yeah.
So we'll probably see similar nuttiness this time around. And again, you know, you're looking at some of the leading lights of the right potentially losing in the House. And then, you know, somehow they're going to have to – these guys who thought that the Senate was just a gimme are going to have to come to sort of grips with the fact that at least as of right now, it looks like they're not going to come anywhere close to winning the Senate.
Yeah, let's talk about the Senate
a little bit.
Or
anywhere closer than where they are right now.
Let's talk about the Senate a little bit because this is – this is pretty impressive what's happening. I mean, there was real concern that the Democrats were going to lose the Senate. And now it doesn't look like that. There's stories out, I guess it was today or this week, rather, I should say. First off, there was a debate between Todd Akin and Claire McCaskill. And
the unladylike Claire McCaskill.
I just don't understand. this guy just... he's just nuts, right? I mean, that's it, right?
But that's the thing is he's just nuts. But is he any different than Alan West or Michelle Bachmann or Louis Gohmert? Or I mean, there's like so many of these. He is. He's crazy. But the problem is that he's representative of like 50 to maybe 80 members of the House Republican caucus at least, you know. But okay, but your point's right. He's nuts, and he can't obviously control himself, or he lives – in the bubble he lives in where you can say stuff like that and that's completely acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, it's
just – the crowd he runs with.
Just Todd being Todd.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was – the guy literally says – I mean, we keep sort of – I don't know if people understand this. He said Akin said – he told the Kansas City Star that I think we have a very clear path to victory, and apparently Claire McCaskill thinks we do too, because she was very aggressive at the debate, which was quite different than it was when she ran against Jim Talent, Akin told the Kansas City Star. She had a confidence and was much more ladylike in 2006. But in the debate on Friday, she came out swinging, and I think that's because she feels threatened. Like, what does that mean, like, ladylike? I mean, honestly, this guy...
Did she make him tea? In 2006, and maybe did she do what Michelle Bachmann did in that debate, where she poured the water for all the guys?
Yeah, I mean, she just didn't. She didn't.
What did Claire McCaskill do that was so ladylike? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, she curtsied.
In his view,
she curtsied.
Yes, that's true.
She curtsied, and of course, she wore white gloves and held her hand out for her hand to be kissed by Mr. Talon. And.
Claire McCaskill.
This is just unbelievable, this guy.
What happened to her ladiness? So he's unbelievable, and my guess is that can't help. And then in the span of, like, what, 72 hours, maybe I'm being generous, we have videos come out. The Republicans have to really get down with this whole thing, that when they see the light go on and people press, like, record on the videotaping machine – you probably shouldn't say stupid stuff.
Well, but you know what? See, I don't think, we're going to go into this, but I don't think they think it's stupid stuff. I mean, I think they have like they're, and particularly these are from, you know, a couple of months ago, and it just seems that there has been that the Paul Ryan pick, I think, has made it. The Democrats haven't pushed it as much as I had hoped they would, but it really has made Social Security and Medicare very toxic issues for these guys. You know what I mean?
That's true. And it's actually made, in some ways, pushed some of these people to have to be a little more extreme, to be a little more crazy than they would have otherwise been, because they've had to talk about these issues. And maybe Democrats would have been trying to force the issue anyhow, but they wouldn't. But it wouldn't have come up as regularly if you didn't have Paul Ryan out there with the Paul Ryan plan. So, you know, Tommy Thompson speaks to the Tea Party guys. And
now, we should say, Tommy Thompson, of course, is running for senator in Wisconsin against Tammy Baldwin. He is down in the polls, and he is blaming Mitt Romney for it.
Right. This is a four-term governor of Wisconsin. So this is a guy that literally got elected for the better part of two decades in Wisconsin, again and again and again. And he's now down the polls, and he said that he was the guy who was able to reform welfare. He's the guy to get rid of Medicaid and Medicare. Yep. So that's not going to be helpful. I'm going to step right out and say that. And then Linda McMahon, she of the great WWE steroids, and her daughter being simulated being raped on stage for the amusement of fat beer guzzling men.
Just be careful. You're getting Matt's ire up because he's a big wrestling fan.
To be honest, I'm shocked they're not hitting her even harder. There's footage of her doing things. She was a character on the show for a while. Linda McMahon herself.
See, so there you go. And I got no problem with people liking wrestling. I mean, some of the side things that went on. And when you get your own daughter out there and you simulate somebody raping her, I think that's probably a little inappropriate.
Well, that's what Todd Akin would call illegitimate rape.
Exactly. And he probably would refer to it as unladylike.
Well,
too.
No. I think in Todd Akin's world, that's very ladylike.
Well, maybe it's just lying there and taking it is ladylike.
Indeed.
I
mean, look, that's illegitimate rape, but it is ladylike to be doing what, you know, I guess, I don't know. I don't
well,
have
if it's illegitimate rape, she couldn't have gotten pregnant, so that's a good sign.
Right.
Right there.
Right.
So you got that, and just when you think Linda McMahon can't be really much more reprehensible, she talked about how Social Security should have a sunset, and then bye-bye.
Let's wade through this for a second, because you see, this is what I'm talking about. I don't get. This was one of those things. It was earlier in the year. It was in April, right? And Tommy Thompson's thing was in June, and it's literally like the now. We should say this, that Tommy Thompson...
Like somebody had a big pile of tapes and started releasing all of them?
Well,
I don't know.
Yes, but also I think that the debate has shifted. I mean, I really do think that Paul Ryan sort of forced the debate from sort of jobs to the social safety nets, to social insurance, to... I really do think it's there. I mean, I was talking to Thomas Frank yesterday, and I was saying that, like, you know, even though President Obama – and President Obama's rhetoric has been more populist since about Labor Day of last year and certainly helped by the Occupy movement. But
– You with me, Sam?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Cliff? Cliff?
Yeah, now I got you again. I lost you for a second there.
Yeah, I don't know. We heard you. You were just sort of dozing off. But I was saying
I fell asleep. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's like
I
my
kid
family.
You, Sam.
It's like my family.
I kid because I love.
No,
go ahead.
I understand. So, but I mean, the point being that Paul Ryan changed his debate, and you know, I was saying to Thomas Frank yesterday on the program that you know. Even if you don't want to go populist, Mitt Romney almost is like playing tennis against a backboard, and he's losing because he's just so much of a plutocrat that the populist rhetoric generates itself. And
that's a great point.
You don't even need to.
How could you not be a populist against the guy? I mean, how could you look at a guy with all the Swiss bank accounts and Cayman Island stuff and the things he says? He plays sport And, you know, just the whole, his whole being. How could you not? You're right.
Right. I mean, short of Donald Trump, is there anybody who could run against Romney and not look like a man or a woman of the people? I mean, honestly, and so I think, you know, we're seeing these tapes come out of these teabagging style, you know, tapes, these, you know, just what I mean, like sort of nut jobbing, shooting from the hip. And I think now they're being scrutinized in a way that they wouldn't have been scrutinized then. So you're right. So Linda McMahon is proposing a Social Security sunset at a Tea Party forum. And she says, you know, the old chestnut, Social Security is going bankrupt. We all know that it's impossible for Social Security to go bankrupt. Because unless, I guess, all the workers under the age of 65 sort of evaporate and go away.
Commit Harry Carey.
Yeah, like they, yeah. they, but no, but they can't commit Harry Carey because what would have to happen is they would have to move to another parallel plane of existence where they still age and become 65, but they do it in a way where they're not participating in American society through the ages up to 65. And so that they don't pay into the system, but they end up collecting.
Sammy, I lost you again, baby.
Oh, wow. That's weird. We'll just are you back?
You're back.
Okay.
You're back.
Well, there's something wrong with your phone, buddy.
My phone sucks. Are you sure it's not yours?
Yeah, because we can hear you throughout that whole time.
Well, I don't know. The piece of crap. Well, AT&T, man.
So the point is I was making about that it's impossible for Social Security to go bankrupt. And she writes, she said, and do I believe that that there are more ways to look at, you know, what we're trying to do when we put Social Security in place? We didn't go back and review it. In other words, I don't know what she's saying here, but she says, I believe in sunset.
Not sure she knows either.
Yeah, that's the point, is I believe in sunset provisions when we pass this kind of legislation. So that if you look at it 10, 15 years down the road to make sure that it's still going to fund itself, Social Security will run out of money if we continue to do what we're doing. If we rob the trust fund, if we think that there's any money there, there's not. But there are certainly securities, banks backed by the federal government. Now,
well,
I don't know what the frick
happened.
She's trying to say here, except it seems that she's saying, I don't want people who are on Social Security now to vote against me, or people who are in the near future. So I'm going to pretend that if we don't do anything, all of Social Security is going to dry up, as opposed to the fact, which you know full well, Cliff, that in 2033, assuming the worst, in 2033,
pay people, 75%.
75 to 78%. So basically,
that doesn't mean we don't lift the cap on payroll taxes or do any other things. That would be the easiest things to, I mean, that's the thing is when you say Mitt Romney's not a person of the people. She, in a way, is someone of the people, Linda McMahon, in that she's as dumb as the people. In her case, the difference is that I don't think she knows any better. And that's the quality. She's like these first-term teabaggers in the House who just are dealing with issues they have no clue about, and yet they're given power to vote on them and bring them up in committee. And it's rather frightening. I don't think she has a clue. I think she's repeating stuff she's heard. I promise you, if you were to sit her down and ask her, she has no idea really how Social Security works, what it looks like. But that's what she's been told, and you can just get away with saying it because, again, they live in an alternative universe. So in the universe she's speaking to there at a Tea Party rally, that's an actual factual truth. Social Security is about to be gone, and you can do that. The sadder thing to me, I mean, well, I don't know what's sadder. Is it sadder that she could be a nominee of a major party and actually have a chance at sitting in the U.S. Senate? That in and of itself is pretty sad. But on the other side, I look at someone like Tommy Thompson, and people don't get me wrong, he needs to go down because obviously he's willing to pander and become right wing. But those guys are just as sad because he does know better. You know, he came from a Republican Party before. He was a guy that, yes, was anti-choice but in favor of stem cell research. Like, there was nuance to some of his positions. He thought about things. And I may have disagreed with him and on a lot of what he did, but he wasn't a know-nothing. He was more in the mold of, like, you know, Dick Lugar, George Voinovich from here in Ohio, people like that, that were sort of center right, you know, who, but who actually did believe in governing. But all these guys, and Dick Lugar did it during his shameful primary too, which he ended up losing anyhow, is they throw away all of their achievements and, you know, and try to pander to the know-nothings. And that's obviously what Tommy Thompson was doing there. I don't believe for a second he really thinks, in his heart of hearts that Medicare should disappear, but he'd vote for it if it would get him elected. And that's all you need to know about him. Is that he'll advocate for it and he'd vote for it. You know, so obviously he's willing to trade in what he knows is right to get elected. And so he's as bad as the know-nothings themselves, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. All right. So give me a quick sense here of what Senate races we should be looking at. Obviously, Connecticut's a big deal, and Wisconsin is one that's going to be a surprise. Missouri could be the could be a big surprise. I was at a
Did you just say Missouri?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, Sammy.
Oh, yeah, dude. Listen, I'm coast to coast.
You're a man of the people. I got to do that. I didn't know that. Yeah, I'm impressed. That's all I'm going to say.
Nevada?
Did you say Caribbean or Caribbean?
Wait, did I say Nevada right? Nevada. Nevada.
Nevada. We're going to Nevada in like 2 weeks.
Indeed.
We're going to do this show live from there, but that's a whole other thing.
That's a whole other thing. But last night I was at a Warren fundraiser, and I think she's going to win big in Massachusetts.
I do too. I do. You can convince maybe, off, you know, it seems 10%, 12%, you know, whatever the ticket split. At this point, now that Romney's not holding up even in his sort of home state, and it looks like Obama's going to win there by at least 25 points. I don't see him, you know, I don't see a quarter of the electorate splitting tickets. So Brandon Brown's being an idiot, and he got himself in trouble, obviously, by being a racist kook with pushing the whole Cherokee thing, and I think he's going to pay the price for that now. And it is, so I think those are all important races. The race, you know, the truth is I think, you know, Nelson in Florida, Sherrod Brown, races they were targeting, those guys are in great shape right now. I think there's some interesting ones in Republican territory. I think Heidi Heitkamp up in North Dakota could pull out a win potentially. If Obama can come within 10 points there, which he did last time around, I think that's doable. Maybe Tester holds on in Montana. That's going to be a really close one. But it's just a different map right now, because if they lose, and they may lose the Nevada race also. Shelley Berkeley may beat Heller. So, I mean, when you're looking at all of that, it's amazing when you think of where this was. And I think the key thing here is they're already trying to make excuses. Karl Rove, for example, and his dragging his slimy carcass on TV as he does, starts saying, well, they didn't recruit people who are as good. Yes, they did. They recruited Tommy Thompson, a four-term governor. They recruited Linda Lingle in Hawaii, a two-term governor. They recruited Heather Wilson, a congresswoman in New Mexico, which was supposed to be a swing state.
My daughter saw the breasts of on TV, and I can never turn on my TV again.
Yes, she's an idiot, but she was a moderate congresswoman in a state that was supposed to be a swing state until the Republican Party decided to give the middle finger to the all-Hispanics.
I took pictures of my TV and forced my daughter to look at that nipple over and over again.
Do you think she still has nightmares where she, like, wakes up and there's a nipple staring her in the face, like
oh
a big one?
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
It's like in Back to the Future, you know, when Michael J. Fox dressed up as the spaceman, they come back and I think she probably wakes up and there's a big nipple in her room.
My daughter had no idea people had nipples.
Very well done, Sam.
Now, when she did that, I had no child. Now, having a seven-year-old daughter, the idea that a shirt would fall down or whatever it was, and for like a half a second, there would be a nipple, that I would somehow, like, this would scar my daughter, is so preposterous to me now. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to get off topic. There you go. Now you're really gone.
Am I here?
Now you're back. I don't know what you're doing.
It was the nipple.
There you go.
The nipple's attacking. That's what happened.
Cliff
the
passed nipple, out.
Well, forget it.
He passed out.
I'm not going to go any further. If I take this metaphor any further, I'll get myself in trouble. So
the Senate. What about the House? I mean, the real problem for the Democrats taking back the House, it seems to me, is a function of two things. function of California having this new type of primary that the Democrats didn't seem to handle very well. And so you have a situation where you have two Republicans actually running against each other in a bluish colored districts in California. And you've had the 2010 census where Republican state legislators were so effective in gerrymandering that they have created districts that are incredibly safe for Republican congresspeople.
Yeah, I think without those things, I think to me it would almost be a foregone conclusion that Democrats would take the House back right now. I think with that, that changes things, but they do have, there are some very misplaced people, like Joe Walsh comes to mind, who are in districts that are swing districts where their beliefs and general being is way outside of the mainstream. Taking back the House, that's tough. There are some people starting to say they think it's possible. Some of the prognosticator types. 15 to 20 seats, I think, could happen. They would need 25 to take it back. I have a real hard time.
You there? Ladies and gentlemen, we will be with you in a moment as we try and get Cliff Schechter back on the program.
Hello?
Okay, there you are.
I don't know what the hell is going on.
All right, well,
can you hear me still?
Yeah, we can hear you. So 15, 20 seats in the House. And it's going to be what's going to be really interesting is to see what happens in the Senate, because, you know, if we have Tammy Baldwin and Elizabeth Warren in the Senate. We have.
If you can get the two of them in there, I mean, that can be huge. Yeah, people remember just what one voice like a Paul Wellstone or a Russ Feingold can do. When you have real leaders standing up on issues, people willing to stand up well to the left, for example, of our president on things like grand bargains, I think that's enormously important. So,
and I want to call people's attention to it.
Massachusetts also is a net pickup of a seat, which means if we lose some, so it's doubly important that we win that. And also, if Scott Brown wins this one, he's probably going to be there forever.
Yeah,
people need to realize that he'll burnish his moderate-ish image, which is all BS, and we may not get somebody ever as good. And for him to be sitting for numerous terms in Teddy Kennedy's seat is pretty offensive to me.
Well, the thing that people should remember here, okay, is that, you know, Al Franken went into the Senate, and I think he was sort of one of the strongest, still primed to be one of the strongest sort of progressive voices in the Senate. But people should remember, the guy won his election by 100 votes, and that makes you very cautious. You come from Massachusetts, and Elizabeth Warren, this is Elizabeth Warren's seat, in the same way that it would be Scott Brown's for generations, I think it would be Elizabeth Warren's for generations. She can afford to be a very, very strong voice. You know, once Massachusetts gets over its problem with electing women to statewide office, federal office, I think she's in there for a long time. And then to have, you know, Tammy Baldwin in there, and if you've got a second
biggest problem after Bobby Valentine.
Exactly. And if you get Sherrod Brown into Ohio, this is going to be his second term. He's also going to feel a little emboldened, I think, too. So,
oh, there's no doubt. No doubt he will, and I think if Tammy Baldwin wins by a good margin, she will. And imagine if you have like a half dozen to a dozen voices who are willing to stand up and speak out strongly. Yeah. You know, I mean, it makes a difference. Leadership matters. People are swayed by good, you know, strong people who stand up for things. And I think the House is the same thing. We have a number of progressives in seats around the two seats in New Hampshire. We could win with terrific progressives in North Carolina.
Well, Cliffy, this could be it, buddy. I'm not sure what's going on today. We've never experienced it quite like this.
No.
Am I here? Do you hear me?
Now you're back. I don't know what's going on. So there's a ghost in the machine. All right. So, well, we got the gist of this. This could be. We could be getting some really important people in the Congress, which could hopefully impact any of these talks of grand bargain, which you and I both are I don't know, extremely sensitive to.
Yes. Yep. So what happens is important. I mean, it's an up and down ballot. What happens is very important. So hopefully keep going, man. Yep. Keep on keeping on in the right direction as things are. Mitt Romney should keep talking, and I think Obama's entire plan for the debates should be actually when they ask Obama questions, just to hand the microphone over to Mitt.
Oh, that's right. We're going to have the opportunity to talk about the debate next week. That's going to be fun. Cliff,
yeah,
always a pleasure. The next 2 or 3 weeks are going to be so fun for us. We're going to be in Vegas watching the debate together at the Mass Tort Conference. And we'll be able to talk about the first debate next week. Oh, God. It's wonderful.
Just so much fun.
So much fun. All right, Cliff Schecker, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, sorry, phone stuff. We'll get that worked out.
All right, we'll work on it.
Take it easy, buddy.
All right, bye-bye. Bye. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break here. And do we have We Are the Majority by Muckraker? Well, maybe we'll play it after. Maybe we'll play it after Isabel. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the wonderful Isabel Gillies in just a moment. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Don't forget, folks, if this ends up being a Freebie Friday, I don't know if it will be. It might be. I'm creating a little suspense. You can become a member of this show and support this show, even if you're a free listener. Even if you listen to just the first 40 minutes of the show, your membership supports the existence of that first 40 minutes. And, of course, you also are eligible for a free DVD. And if you joined up and you haven't got your DVD, email us with a subject line swag. Check out the DVDs available to you as a member under membership benefits under the Become a Member page at majority.fm. Your memberships support this program. 99.7% of our revenue. Well, it's 90. I don't know. I'm not good at math, but a lot of it. So please become a member today. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Isabel.
Time for a report. We are the majority, not the sheeple. We are the majority. We the people. Why do we walk the walk? Why do we talk the talk? Why don't we just stand by? If they take a warranty, why? That's why. Wait, wait. Oh. This. True. Wait, wait. Oh. This.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, before we bring in best-selling author, I guess blogger, too. She's doing some anger management thing. We'll ask her about that. And the former wife of Chris Maloney's character on SUV? One of those SVU?
SVU.
All right, but let's first have her theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two. to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Why, ladies and gentlemen, there she is. It is, woo-hoo! Of course. Wow, you're very excited today. Hold on.
That song fires me up.
I'm very excited to have this show here. Get fired up by the Reaper Cake tune, the Jimmy Reaper Cake tune. You know, Isabel, you should know that what's really impressive about that Jimmy Reaper Cake theme song is that he doesn't mention himself in it. And he rarely will cut a...
Is that unusual?
It's very unusual for him not to self-reference in a song. So that is one of the world's... It's one of the highest compliments, I guess. Or perhaps maybe it's an insult. I'm not sure.
I know. Maybe he doesn't want to associate.
That's right. Maybe he's trying to... I don't know. That cuts both ways, I guess. Now, Isabel, before we get to the movie pick...
Yes.
It's been so long that we've talked. And I know today it was pouring rain when you dropped off your child at school, because it was pouring rain when I dropped off my child at the same school. My pants are still soaked 3 hours later.
It was rain. I mean, I guess, well, the weather is interesting to me. So I'm just going to say it. So it was pouring when we dropped off. I happened to go to school early because I'm a class parent and I had a meeting at 8:00. For that.
Now,
so
let's give you just a sense of what Isabel's like, folks. There you go. She's a class parent. She tries to rub it in your face a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. So I actually missed the rain because I was doing, you know, sort of classroom duties and talking about the, you know, the auction already, mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Right.
But then, okay, so then I come home and I'm doing some work.
Sort of like, trying to like play the class parent card.
Here is what I'm like. I'm like that Tracy, what's her name in Elections?
Tracy Flick in Elections, exactly.
That's right. That's
you
what
are.
I'm like. PA Izzy Gillies.
It's true.
Just rubbing it in everybody's face.
You're a little bit neurotic.
Neurotic?
Is that the right
word? Because I raise my hand and volunteer and say, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah,
that's not being neurotic. That's being helpful.
I think that your hand was already raised before someone even asked for volunteers.
well, okay. So you got me there a little bit. But here's the thing. It's maybe 15 to 17% of people who will help anyway. In any, it's always the same people.
Yeah.
And that's true, you know, it's sort of true all over the place. There's volunteer people. But here's the thing, I'm not that good at it.
Really?
But it's volunteer, so what are you going to do? I mean, I'm not the head of the PA or anything like that. I can't do a spreadsheet or do a group email or anything. I'm just there to get the orange juice.
Wait a second, you can't do a group email?
Not really.
What do you mean?
Because I don't know, I can't really figure out how to do it. I sit there and do every single person. I don't know how to get them all in one group.
Are you serious?
Yep.
Now, we should remind people that Isabel's never really been able to listen to the show because she doesn't know how to work a podcast.
Well, I can. I just have to be on my computer, which is most of the time because I work from home.
But no, hey. You're not actually, a podcast is specifically when you download it. You just go to the website and play it.
Right. That's what I do.
You can press a button.
That's right. I would still be making it in the jungle because I get the information. It's not like I'm, you know, evolution's going to be on my side.
What do you mean you would be making it in the jungle? What does that mean?
Well, if we were apes.
What?
You
if
know.
We were apes in what? Wait, if we were apes?
Because perhaps that I don't do all these technical things, that might leave me behind evolutionarily. But I don't think I'm that bad. I mean, I think I'm pretty bad. But I don't think I'm so bad that I would get extinct or anything.
Basically, she'd be the queen of ape radio is what she's saying.
So you're saying you would be the most technologically savvy of apes if you were an ape.
Well, no. Here's the thing. We don't watch our television programs in HD, even though we have it. Okay?
Why?
Because
you can't figure out what the stations are?
We can't. I don't know. It's like you have to put a 700 in front of it. I can't do it. I just,
right. Isabel,
I know what I know.
Isabel,
I know.
Do you have Time
ABC,
Warner cable?
NBC.
Do you know what? Do you know what you need to do? Listen to me. This is gonna. I'm gonna change your life. All right? Because
okay.
I just got HD. Like, I don't know, 6 months ago, because Matt was yelling at me, and then Benjamin upgraded his TV, and we took his TV. What you do is, when you get to a station, let's say Channel 4, right? Or
right.
Whatever it is, whatever's NBC, and you want the HD version, press the round button that says select.
And it gives you an option.
And it gives you an option, and then you can click the HD one.
I know. I get it. It's not that I don't understand it. That's why I would not be extinct right now. I understand it, but some 1987 part of me keeps me from doing it. Like,
well,
I don't fast forward through commercials.
You want an old TV? I can get one for you.
No, I like. I mean, because the kids will do it. I don't know.
Standard
def
just looks so good on HD TV, Sam.
There's nothing worse than standard definition.
I'll tell you,
on HD TV.
No, it is. As an aging actress,
yeah.
HD is not
you
your
know.
Friend.
You're not aging.
Oh, come on.
No.
HD is not your friend. You need that all those pixels to help you out. The HD, if you're in your 40s, whoo, unforgiving.
I will say this.
Not pretty.
When I go and do current, I'm like, I'm not worried about it. It doesn't make a difference. Makeup or not, I haven't brushed my hair. I haven't shaved. It doesn't make a difference because it's all just, they're just all in standard definition and you can't see anything. That I know, that part I know is true.
Right, but then they up that shit to HD and suddenly you can see every pore.
All right, yeah, there you go. We're going to have to bleep that for the radio version of this.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, the first hour of the show is on... It's on Washington, D.C. radio, so you're going to have
it
a
is?
Lot of...
I love Washington, D.C.
Well, you're going to have a lot
I was
of
just there.
Congressmen hearing you cuss.
Do you know, this is what I think about Washington. My brother lives there, and he does not freak out that he lives in the same city as the president. If I lived in Washington, or really maybe in London, I'd always be like, oh, my God, Obama's here. Obama is here.
What do you mean? Wait. Isabel, London?
Yeah, because then the royal family's there. The
but,
queen
wait a second. Let
is
me ask you this.
Living right here.
Do you freak out that you're living in the same country as the president?
No. I would be freaked out. When I go to
Washington,
you've
got to be in the same city?
Yeah, because I maybe might see him then. Or he might fly over me in a helicopter or something like that. And
this
that is cool.
This is like the conversations I have with Myla.
Do you think you like bump into him on a normal basis in Washington?
Well, I mean, when I go there and then I look through the bars, I'm like, you guys, are Sasha and
Obama
Malia
could be in this bar.
Obama's in there. Obama's right there. I want to meet him so badly. And I met Michelle.
This is like, seriously, like I've had this exact conversation with Myla.
I'm not unlike a 7-year-old.
I didn't pick up on that, but you're really, it's like, what happened? Did you ever have like an experience with any of the... Like a president? What?
I just think it's cool. I think it's very cool to live in Washington and you live in the same city as the president.
I don't know.
My brother never mentions it.
I guess people now live in Washington, but back in the day, the city would just sort of like just shut down at night. I know. So I find it. I mean, it used to be. I don't know the city that well, but I mean, I spent the summer there 25 years ago, and it was incredibly segregated and. It was, I didn't particularly like it and just transient. Everybody was from somewhere else or I don't know.
I know people say that, but I don't know. I like it. Right. I dig it there, but then I'd always feel like maybe I was missing out cause I didn't have a political job.
Right. You're not part of the industry. It's like going to,
right.
It's like going to LA, living in Hollywood and doing
that's
like,
awful.
Yeah. I'm not involved.
That's awful. When you know what the worst day of the year is if you're an unemployed actress and you're 24 years old is when you're coming down Laurel Canyon and then there's this huge billboard and in March or in April or somewhere around there, maybe February, they have this huge issue of all the young actresses and it's all over the, you know, there's like six of them or eight of them and they're all on the cover. Do you know that issue of Vanity Fair? Like all the actresses. And it's this huge billboard right at the end of Laurel Canyon. And I just used to sit there at the red light and be like, God, I'm a failure. Look at all those girls. And I'm not one of them.
Well, there's only six of them up there, Isabel.
Right, but I could be one of the six if I wasn't a failure.
On the positive side, you are in the same, you were in the same city as them, so you had that.
Well, they're not as cool as Obama. Yeah. Wait, who's this piping in?
It's Matt.
Oh, hey, Matt.
Hello.
He doesn't. You don't usually talk so much.
Yeah, he's really. I don't know. He's really asserting himself today.
I know.
Well,
I like it.
I mean, Isabel, I don't think there was ever a time in your career where you were a failure.
No, I know. But it's just, it's hard. I forgot why we're even talking about this. Because, living in a city that you're not in the industry.
Right. You were in the industry.
That's hard. Well, yeah. But I wasn't a movie star.
No. Well, you were in a couple of movies.
Yeah. That's not the same as being a star. I never really wanted to be a star. Yeah, that's better.
You really wanted to be a star?
A lot better. No, no, I didn't want to be a star.
Yeah.
No.
I know. That's a
tough way to
go into
business. I would like to sell millions of books, though.
There you go, folks. And
hundreds and millions.
Well, the way I started this whole thing, I wanted to know, how is your anger blog going? Weren't you, like, trying to...
I haven't done it in 4 months. Because, here's why.
What?
Because I'm really... I haven't done it in 4 months. Because, not because I have lost my temper... Because I really am in the throes of writing this book, and it's too much. I can't write all day and do a blog. I can't write that much.
Wow.
So I kind of,
and
I know.
And are people, like, saying mean things about you on your blog for abandoning them? I mean, you signed them up for a year-long project to stay not angry, and now you've just walked away from those people.
Do you think people really are looking?
Well, I mean, it's been, I guess, 3 or 4 months since I checked, but... Yeah.
Uh-oh, SpaghettiO. Maybe I better go do one. And I'm going to actually do one, and I'll say that you called me out. It's not that I'm not still doing the project. I'm just not writing about it because I'm writing about this other thing all the time.
So have you gotten angry or what?
No. I think I'm sort of done with that old, you know, really losing it thing. But I'll tell you why.
Okay. I want to hear this.
It's big. It's kind of big, though. It's kind of heavy. I don't know if I should really say it. I think it was hormones.
Mm.
Just putting it out there.
Okay, so you've had hormone problems.
Yeah, I was having things that, you know, hormones changes. And it freaked me out. I got all crazy.
I can tell you this, that when my wife was pregnant with all those hormones, it was probably one of the worst times of my life. I mean,
well, you've got another one coming up. Well, you have another one coming up.
Well, we'll see.
Well, no, you do, because menopause.
Oh, menopause.
Right.
Great. Right. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, don't, because it's a nightmare, and she'll probably start an anger blog.
Oh. All right. Now, you had the early menopause, is that what you're saying?
I went, yeah. If we really, oh my God, I can't even believe we're talking about this. But yeah,
this is like Oprah.
Went through menopause very, very young.
Wow.
What
accounts for that?
You don't know. No, it's not hereditary. It's not, it's just what your body does. I don't know. And it doesn't have any bearing on other health things, except that you can't have babies. But so it was so early, and everything was going crazy. I was having hot flashes. I was like, what's happening? And then so the doctors, you know, did all these tests, and they're like, well, this is weird, but this is the deal.
Wow.
It was a big bummer.
Wow.
And it makes you insane. I have to tell you, it makes you insane. You just feel it's – no one talks about it because I guess it's sort of gross or something, but – like talking about getting your period, whatever, it's just the body. But, you know, it's just, it is this massive change in your hormones. So suddenly you're, you know, I mean, a hot flash is the craziest thing you can ever feel in your life. It's like somebody just suddenly turns, it's not even that someone turns up the heat. It's like your body temperature goes up 40 degrees or something for about a minute. So you're just standing there, and you're like, oh my God, what's happening? And then it's like, whoosh, and then you get upset, and it's just a nightmare.
Weird.
I know.
Well, I'm,
sorry,
I
guys.
I can't wait to look forward to that. Yeah, I mean, this is it's like all of a sudden it's like the Oxygen Network here.
I know. I don't know how, you know me, I'll just tell anything. But so yeah, so that you know, that happened, and then it makes you crazy, and so then I was like all freaking out, and then I was losing my temper and stuff. But now it's all okay, and everything's fine.
You better
wrap that up
on that blog.
I know. I think maybe I better say that now that I've said it on a Majority Report. What's going to happen? Are people going to? Such a big thing to share. My husband's going to be like, "What did you do?"
Well,
I think I'm blushing. I think I'm sitting here blushing.
Well, no, it's. I mean, I don't think. You know, it's. Why not? But it's not that. I mean, it's.
It's not. You know.
It's not,
I mean,
like you're. You know, I don't know. It's not. It's not that.
It's just that people don't really talk about it. So then, if you do talk about it, and then it's so early because I'm only 42, but this happened like 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Weird.
So I know it really was weird. And then, you know, and then it was sad because you can't have babies anymore, and that's hard. But when you're in your 50s, people are like, yeah, well, you're in your 50s. So,
right.
You know, that's the way life goes. But if you're in your 30s, that's sort of hard.
I remember when my mom went through it.
You do?
Oh, I hope I'm not telling any tales out of turn that my mom, who's now in her 70s, went through menopause. So...
I know. You remember that, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she was a cuckoo bird?
Well, I mean, she just did the hot flashes. I mean, you know.
Right.
But,
and then you get upset. It's very sad.
I remember when Nikki was pregnant, I remember when Myla, you know, we were in the delivery room, and the baby, Myla, you know, was put on Nikki's chest. And I remember looking at my newborn baby and saying, thank God my wife is not pregnant anymore.
I know. But then you didn't even know about the hormones that happened at post-birth.
And then it didn't go away for like...
No.
I think probably 6 months to 2.5 years. Somewhere between 6 and 36 months, I think it took for the hormones to proceed.
If you think that your hormones can grow a human... Hormones grow a human being, right?
Yeah.
They're pretty powerful, right? They're pretty intense.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Fair enough. I didn't, you know.
I think that was contributing to my whole, you know, this feeling of losing control and losing a part of your life that, you know, it's like this rhythm, right? It's this sort of cycle that you're used to, and suddenly you don't have it, and you go nuts. And then, you know, and then if you don't understand why that's happening, then you're like, oh, I'm just going crazy. I'm crazy. And then your husband looks at you like you're crazy, and your kids are like, what's happening to you? And then you get everything figured out, and it's all okay.
All right. Well, if you say so, hopefully that'll...
Maybe I need to write a new book.
Yes.
About menopause.
I'm not kidding.
Ew.
Why not? I know. I think it's time. Do it.
I know.
All right. Well,
now that I've just blown
10%
it,
of proceeds,
you know.
go to the Majority Report. So now, okay. Isabel, look, now I should remind people, because of what happened when my child was born, I had a child, I am not allowed to go out and see movies anymore. I don't know how you get away with it, but I'm not allowed to go out. So. I've asked you to come on as one of the people who come on to give me a suggestion for either a Netflix or an Amazon streaming movie, something I can watch on my TV. Now, apparently, Voodoo is on my Roku. I know you don't know
Voodoo.
What any of those words mean, but...
No, I do not.
But it may open the door. I got to look into it. I think it's a paid service. I'm not sure I'm down with that. But so... What do you got for us this week?
I've got such a beautiful one, and Myla can watch it too. The only thing is, it's in Japanese, so I don't know how good a reader Myla is.
I'm not sure if you know this, but Myla does not speak Japanese.
But she might read English.
Yeah,
she might.
No, she reads English, but I don't know if she's ready to read that quickly. But maybe.
Maybe, but you might be able. Okay, this film is called. And I hope my pronunciation is correct. I should have done that thing. I saw my kid doing the thing the other day where you can go and on your computer and say pronounce, and it will say
mischievous or whatever.
Right. Well, why don't you tell me what it is, and I will see if I can get it to be pronounced. Okay?
It's called Hero Dreams of Sushi.
Wait a second.
Hero.
What part did you not know how to pronounce there?
Because it's spelled J-I-R-O.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to have probably like sushi. I thought you pronounced really well. Dreams, I thought it was great.
Hero Dreams of Sushi.
Okay.
Okay. It's about an 85-year-old man, master sushi chef in Japan. He's probably the world's greatest sushi chef.
Is this a documentary?
It's a documentary.
Okay.
And he owns a tiny little restaurant in a subway station in Japan, and it's got 10 seats, and you reserve a year and a ahead.
Wow.
He's been making sushi since he was 10. And so you know me how I love to know about someone's craft down to the you know,
granular aspects.
Granular. I was trying not to make a rice reference, but I like to know. Okay, so this guy, he is a master. He's a genius. He's a father of two who both work under him.
Mm.
And so it's about, so in a bigger picture way, the movie is really about discipline, hard work. You've never seen such focus and hard work and dedication and repetition as this man. So it's great sort of commentary about work, which we think nonstop about anyway, right? So it's about work ethic. It's about fatherhood. It's about sushi and how it's made. And the guy has a rice expert and a mackerel expert and a shrimp expert and a tuna expert. It's all about different tuna and all this stuff. And then, but it's kind of like, do you remember Bill Cunningham, New York?
Yes, and you know what? I was skeptical when you suggested that documentary because it was about a guy taking pictures of fashion, which I don't care about, and I loved it.
Right. This is the same deal. It's just that he's a master of sushi.
Sounds great.
It's so good. It's beautiful. It was made in 2011. Beautifully made. It's 85 minutes long. It's so interesting. And what we love is getting, you know, a really looking through the magnifying glass at a very narrow slice of life. And you know, you learn about the knives, you learn about, I mean, it's so interesting. That's what I loved about it. I'm just fascinated the whole time. The guy is a genius. And he got a Michelin 3 stars, and he's only has, you know, it's his restaurant's in the subway station.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
Sounds
good. Dreams of Sushi. It's dreams.
I mean, people
right?
come from all dreams, and that's the thing is that's he literally dreams of sushi in the middle of the night. He'll dream of something he's not doing. Like maybe he has to. Like one example is he.
That doesn't surprise me. That part doesn't surprise me. I wake up in the middle of the night. I am literally having. I'm literally having an argument with like a libertarian in my head.
I know.
And it's just, I can't escape it.
It's like, perfecting an art. You have, and then hey, you know what? You were really good on Up with Chris Hines or whatever his name is.
Chris Hines? When I did my tap dance stuff? Isn't that old?
I thought you were really good.
Chris Hines?
Gregory Hines.
No, yeah, it's Gregory Hines. Chris, what's his name?
Chris Come Hayes? On.
Chris Hayes, yeah.
You didn't really watch it.
Yes, I did.
Did you watch
it? And I tweeted it and everything.
Oh, you did? Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
And then you spoke about childhood poverty beautifully, and I saw all sorts of other people tweeting it.
Oh, well, thank you.
It was, so kudos to you, man.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. That's very very kind of you.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I was going to
Peter knew that you were on.
Yes, I did see that. I did see that he tweeted. I read all of Peter's tweets. I don't, you know, sometimes I don't read.
You don't read mine. He gave a funnier tweet. I was like, "Rock on, Sam," and he was like, "He said something funnier."
I can't remember what it was, but I did notice it. But thank you, Isabel. And this is a great one. Euro.
This is a really good one. Honestly, everybody out there, this is a really, really good one. It's very calm. It's very, it's sort of, you know, it's raining like crazy. It's just, and I thought this would be a great movie to watch, and then maybe you'll go out and get sushi, but it won't be even a...
Now I'm hungry.
I'm hungry, too.
All right. Well, Isabel Gillies, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. As
I shared so much today, Sam.
I know, you did. I hope people appreciated it. We'll see if we can get it trending on Twitter.
Too.
We'll see if we can get the story trending on Twitter.
Oh, my God, how awful that my first thing trending would be, like, early menopause. Oh, my God.
Well,
oh my
Isabel,
God.
I love it. I appreciate it. This is the
you
thing that's
going
to get
first.
Me that daytime talk show that I wanted.
All right. Well, have a good weekend, boys.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Isabel Gillies. That was she really opened up today. She really had to get that off her chest, I think.
The other day I was browsing in a bookstore and I saw a book called Male Menopause. I just thought of that.
Okay.
Speaking of movies to watch with your daughter.
Not necessarily on topic. I tried to get her. She wouldn't do it.
She didn't want to watch those two movies I recommended?
No.
Maybe some
listeners. They're animated.
They are animated. They're great, though.
Yeah.
The Land Before Time and American Tale.
I told her about it. She's like, no, I want to watch Fresh Beat Band. And then...
Let me tell you, those two movies will change her life. They will shape her childhood.
Look, I'm trying to shape her childhood all the time. She's very reluctant. Very reluctant to allow me to shape her childhood in any fashion whatsoever. My child is too strong-willed. That's the problem. Ladies and gentlemen, I know that we've talked a lot about Mitt Romney, his qualities, but I think this new story that comes from Playbook really means from Politico really means we have to take another look at Mitt Romney. And this story comes to us via Bill Marriott, chairman of Marriott International. You'll remember Marriott International. Mitt Romney, when he served on the, I think he was the chair of the audit committee, signed off on a scheme to basically avoid taxes that the IRS found illegal. They had a habit of doing this, apparently. But that's not what this story is about. Bill Marriott, chairman of Marriott, introduced Romney at a Renaissance hotel in Washington, D.C. for a fundraiser, sharing stories about how they had been family friends for decades. This is one of his stories. Both Mitt and I have summer places up in New Hampshire on Lake Winnipesaukee. And a few summers ago, I was taking my grandchildren and children to town in the boat for ice cream. They got a boat. And we got into the docks, and they were all full. And I looked around. There was no place to park. So we stopped at the end of a dock. They all jumped off and ran up the dock. And I realized there was no one in the boat to help me dock the boat, handle the ropes, do anything. They just left me out there at sea.
Editor's note, it was actually a lake.
So I finally found a place to park after about 20 minutes. And I pulled in and I said, who's going to grab the rope? And I looked up, and there was Mitt Romney. So he pulled me in. He tied up the boat for me. He rescued me, just as he's going to rescue this great country. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you get what's going on in this story. Mitt Romney, a friend of Bill Marriott's, saw that he'd need someone to reach out his hand and grab a rope and then actually tie it around a metal cleat. You can't say anything. Can you say anything more important about a man that he's willing to help his friend tie his boat to a dock? You know what's stunning to me about the story is that Here's a guy who's known Mitt Romney for years and years and years, and this story somehow sticks out in his head. Like, it's basically like me saying, like, you know, I remember back in college, and John Benjamin was waiting for me to grab my books and head to class. And I came out of my room, and I dropped my book. And as it fell to the ground, it bounced off my leg, sort of like on my knee. And it slid towards him. And John Benjamin bent over and picked up that book and said, "Here you go, Sam." And I grabbed that book. And I realized that John Benjamin is the type of guy that if America needs to have their book picked up and handed back to them, John Benjamin is your man. No, I remember that story because it was the only time John Benjamin did anything nice. No, I'm not saying that's what Bill Marriott's saying here. But this is just amazing. Like, I couldn't believe it. Here, Mitt Romney was not the guy working in charge of roping and grabbing the rope of the docks, and he still did it. That's when I knew this is a guy I can count on. Who would not grab the rope? Who would not grab their rope? Unbelievable.
I looked up, and there was Mitt Romney. And I looked further up, and there was Seamus.
Mitt Romney put his hand out and was willing to do something that just about every other living human being in that situation would have been willing to do. And that impressed me. That let me know that he was a human being. I don't know. That's the best you can say about a guy? I don't know if that's the best, but John B. Kirk, the right wing talk about how the polls is wrong is setting the predicate for stealing the election through the voter purges and other voter suppression tactics. Usual results will be justified by the idea that the polls were wrong. This is the most important down ticket in close races via the presidential election. But the thing is there is no. I guess there's some of that. You know, here we have Dick Morris on Sean Hannity's program. Y'all remember Dick Morris, right? He's the toe sucker. What is it? He sucks the toe?
He received some toe sucking, which is just, especially after you hear his voice, remember what he sounds like, and if you've ever seen his picture, I mean, the
This
poor
is Dick
woman.
Morris, who worked for Bill Clinton at one point and would have his prostitute listen to the conversation, I guess that was like, it wasn't, like he couldn't pay enough to get the prostitute to suck his toes. So he said, how about I pay you and I let you listen to the conversation I'm having with the President of the United States? And that's how it ends up. Now, to be fair, I imagine he had to wash his feet first. But here he is on the Sean Hannity program talking jibber jab.
He's at the moment in a very strong position. I believe if the election were held today, Romney would win by 4 or 5 points. I believe he would carry Florida, Ohio, Virginia. I believe he would carry Nevada. I believe he would carry Pennsylvania.
Oh, come on.
Pennsylvania, and I believe he would be competitive in Michigan. People need to understand that the polling this year is the worst it's ever been, because this is the first election where if I tell you who's going to vote, I can tell you how they're going to vote. And the models these folks are using are crazy. They assume a Democratic edge of 6 or 7 points.
All right, first off, that voice you heard saying, "Aw, come on," was Sean Hannity. When Sean Hannity is the voice of reason, ladies and gentlemen, you know you've got a problem. And the likely voter model is one that we see in every election. And sometimes people get it wrong. And Dick Morris is arguing that there's a 10-point swing in how much they have got it wrong. Which, of course, you know, I suppose you could say. I will tell you this, folks. And I'm going to make a pronouncement. If the election was held today, as a writing candidate, would win in Pennsylvania if the election was held today. And I can prove it if you hold an election in Pennsylvania today. And I will prove it in that event that it happens. So if Someone can IM me or call into the program. Let me know if Pennsylvania did that. And I think we will find that he will have won the election as a write-in candidate. So,
also, if the polls accurately reflected your support by eliminating all the poll numbers for Biden and Ryan so that they're down to zero, and then we could just throw in a couple of numbers for you, and you would be leading in Pennsylvania for the Cedar unskewed poll.
Yes, you're talking about the vice presidential race. I just made a claim about the presidential race.
You would win presidency in Pennsylvania.
Both. Both. Both the presidency and the vice presidency on a write-in candidate ballot. Now, of course, the reason why the polls don't reflect this is because, of course, they have refused to ask the question. Would you vote for Sam Cedar as a write-in candidate? So when you're faced with only those people. All right. It's Friday, folks. Left Coast Marcus, do you think these cries of the polls being skewed is cover for when they steal the election with electronic machine fraud? That is exactly what John P. Kirk was suggesting. Hormones, hot flashes, your mom's menopause. I've got a new name for the show, the TMI report. A-Square. We saw A-Square last night at the Elizabeth Warren thing. Sam, Matt and Michael, good to meet you. Michael, keep the emails coming. I heard Elizabeth Warren use the phrase, we need to tighten our belts at campaign event. Oh, wonder if besides PCC folks like Adam Green involved, there are some OFA people writing her stump speeches. I hope she does not get co-opted because we desperately need more progressives in Congress. I mean, she spoke pretty strongly about a Medicare and Social Security. I'm also concerned because you pointed out this week in Massachusetts, it has a unique brand of jerks. What did you call them? Massholes, I believe it was. And it seems like they're for Brown. The polls have her close, but not really ahead. Your prediction for this race? Well, I think the polls have her up, actually. Most of the polls I've seen, I think she's going to win. I think she's going to win fairly big there. The Menino endorsement means a lot in Massachusetts. Martha Coakley. Remember, Scott Brown has yet to win. He's yet to win a general election race. I mean, a real election. And he has not won an election where, a president is running. And that makes a huge difference because Obama's going to win very big in Massachusetts. I think Cliff said this. Obama's going to win by nearly 25 percentage points in Massachusetts. And it is very hard to imagine those people splitting their ticket that much. So, you know, we'll see. We never know, but that would be my prediction.
A-Squared, send over that that photo you took.
Yeah, we want to see that photo. Please send us that photo at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Bush and Cheney's, Obama's too big to fail. Multinational banking trickle-down stupidity continues. Fed buys $20 billion in QE3 mortgages. Jobs created, zero. Senator McCaskill, Aiken. Now, wait a second. Now, why do you think that Obama has really that much ability to influence Bernanke? I mean, I think what Bernanke would like to see is more fiscal stimulus, but can't get it. But I agree with you that, you know, I don't think QE3 is going to create a Weimar Republic like you seem to think it is. I just think it basically helps the banks. But I know. Stop talking, Sam. You don't know what you're talking about. I'll send you a clip from Zero Hedge and teach you. You mean like Murdoch media skews to the right? What a shocker. 10 of Wall Street Journal op-ed writers are Mitt Romney advisors. Wow. Attention, proprietary pea brains. Your cult leader has a faux apology for you. Apple CEO, extremely sorry that Maps app, for that Maps app. Try using Google instead. A prime example of baffling them with BS. Pathological liar Bachman forces AP to impose fact check quota. Mass shooting in Minneapolis leaves 5 dead. Oy. Did you hear about that? I didn't hear about that.
No.
Bush and Cheney's, Romney's campaign is so dead in the water that the Mormons have started getting their baptizing kids kits ready. Small but dedicated army of women Aiken supporters plan to stand with him. Tom Frackman. As I continue to hear the political commentary of a lock for Obama, we need to remember a few things. How many voting machines are tampered with, ballot restrictions, voter turnout, and how many millions of votes will be lost on the ballot truck or mysteriously trashed? No, Sam, I'm sorry. The GOP will do everything to steal as long as there are close elections. Theft will happen time and time again. I don't know how close this is going to be, but I think there's some validity in that. Digital adhesive. Sam, it's great to hear you again. Been a fan since 2004. Your show got me through college. Just started listening again since your last incarnation at Air America. I got an important question for you, though. Whatever happened to Dewey? Well, ladies and gentlemen, for those who don't know, Dewey was a regular caller on the Sam Cedar Show. And Dewey would call in. He was a little bit crazy. He was very worried about the feminization of America that was taking place, as evidenced by Dick Durbin wearing a pink tie in the Senate. He felt that the Iranians were laughing at us because we were so feminine. And if I remember correctly, he had colitis, and that's why he wasn't fighting. We thought for a while that he was John Malkovich. He's playing a joke on me. Not that I know John Malkovich, or he has any reason to play a joke on me, but that would really be one of the best jokes, wouldn't it? Like, you're John Malkovich, and you're thinking, I'm going to play a joke on somebody who can never figure it out. I know, I'm just going to pick someone randomly who's on the radio. Oh, here's this dude. I haven't heard from Dewey in years, of course. I don't know where he is. But I still have tapes of his calls, and maybe someday I'll play it. Well, great to hear from you, Digital Adhesive. Hey, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Tell us how you you found us again. Sugar High 777. Hey, Sam, it's Friday, so I'm going to push Dogtooth on you again. As for politics, when you talk about the lesser of two evils, does that apply in a solid blue state? Do I have your permission to vote green in Pennsylvania? Well, first off, you don't need my permission to do anything. And I think in a state where the polls are showing, I mean, Pennsylvania is a little bit dicey. Talk to me after this voter ID case. I don't know if they've announced a decision yet in Pennsylvania, but they're going to very shortly. But I would say if you're the argument that I've been having assumes that I don't live in New York. Because it would be just too easy for me to say, like, I live in New York, my vote doesn't matter, or he's clearly going to win here without my vote, so I'm going to vote for a Green Party or Rocky Anderson or Working Families Party. I'm going to vote on that. Anybody I vote for, I vote on that ticket. If they don't have a separate candidate for the presidency, it's not unlikely that I will vote for a different candidate. But that's it. Dogtooth. You would be amazed at how many pieces of paper I have in my possession. Tiny pieces of paper that have the words Dogtooth on it. Sugar 77. Dry Zone 9, Fresh Beat Band. Don't you want to smack that guy that raps in the middle of every song? Twist? Do I want to smack Twist? Are you kidding? We went to go, I took Milo to go see the show, the concert.
I don't even know what Fresh Beat Band is.
It is these four.
And I'm fairly good with children's shows.
They seem to be teenagers, although they could be like those teenagers who are actually like 25. And it's a little bit young for her. Her media is pretty her media viewing is a little bit sort of young for her age. But
is she into Yo Gabba Gabba?
I don't know what that means.
Are you being serious?
Yes.
You should watch that show with her.
What is Yo Gabba Gabba?
It's a children's show on Nickelodeon, and they have like good bands on. Like they try to like get kids to listen to good bands.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, she likes that. Anything with music, she likes. She's all she does is walk around the house constantly singing songs. And now, like, she watched Glee at somebody's house, and we're not quite sure that Glee is age-appropriate, but we allow her to listen to the songs that Glee sings, and she was like, I can't believe they sing Make 'Em Laugh. It's such an old song, and they're doing it. But it's all like the in New York.
Jay-Z and Alicia Keys.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't like that song?
Dude, I wake up in the morning and it's just like that and Gotta Move Like Jagger.
I don't know that song, but gotta I'm with Milo move. On the Jay-Z.
All right, what am I doing here? I'm losing it. Kevin 11-721, Mitt Romney, boating story puts John Kerry Swiftboat war record into proper perspective, finally. Into architecture, the Google Maps app for Android has turn-by-turn directions for some time. Google has been deliberately hamstringing the app on iOS. Apple had no choice but to roll out an app that wasn't totally ready in order to provide iPhone users a key feature. There are always two sides to a story.
No, what happened was Google, to add the turn-by-turn directions, Google offered Apple two things. They needed to, A, add more Google branding to the maps so people, it was loud and clear that those maps were provided by Google. And B, they wanted to add their check-in service, which would have sent your data wherever you check in to Google. And Apple nixed both of those things. And so Google said, so we won't add turn-by-turn directions and voice recognition and those other things. So that's why Apple went with their own maps.
Interesting. Interesting. What do you make of that? It's been so long. The plot thickens. Triangle Bill. Sam, another great week of shows. Thomas Frank and yesterday, you yesterday was awesome. Hey, love the conversation with Kim Champion. Kim Champion, I did the same thing about 10 years ago, around 2002-03, because I was so disgusted with Bush. Spent years trying to progress progressive views, focus on issues, etc. here. With the North Carolina Democratic Party, it was very frustrating. I bet. It's very hard and can be very frustrating. My hat's off to Kim Champion, but it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say after years of trying to push Democrats to the left. I believe that more than ever, agree with you, movement politics is where it's at, but we have to also, I guess, win elections. Well, you know, the idea is I think you need to have more than one of you guys. Adam Bomb 99, dear Bush and Chains, try buying a computer without Foxconn components. I built my own, and still at least two major components ended up having Foxconn parts. How are you IMing Sam while avoiding slave labor? Soldering your own motherboard? Rypop Phil. Sam, did you like the new DNC Obama line I first heard from Representative Lee, I think telling us we need to work our way to middle class? Ever want to just knock the shit out of someone? After all the BS with the banking and dishonesty, he can swallow their... He can swallow. There he is, just a moral shipwreck. I got to say, you know, I saw that. What is it? Just vote. What was that thing?
Are you talking about the Samuel Jackson video? Can we swear now?
Yeah.
It's the wake the fuck up video.
Yeah. I couldn't even get through the whole thing. I am fine bashing Mitt Romney, but for the life of me, I cannot watch stuff that is... so full-throated pro-Obama. I just can't. I can't. I can't.
That's Sam's line. He's like, you have crossed the line, sir, when you're talking about actually endorsing or being enthusiastic about
who you vote
for.
That's why. I was thinking
about
that Connor Friesendorf article, and the thing is, he wouldn't have an argument with my position, I think. Bartleby, 141. Sam, 2009 clip of you straightening out conservative collar re-single payer featured in Susie Madra Crooks and Liars post today. Highly recommend watching Carlos on Netflix. Oh, yeah, you said that.
Right. It's a very good movie. I saw that.
Gosh, I got a lot to watch this weekend. It's on instant streaming. Fantastic. John Miles, 27. Oh, that was when I was on TYT. John Miles, 27, Netflix recommendation. Did you ever see Sidney Lumet's Before the Devil Knows You're Dead? No. Gosh. Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Apple actually had another year on their contract to use Google Maps as they were. Apple cared more about upstaging Google than their users and released a Maps that wasn't ready. There's the Counter-Strike. Long Doggy 67, talk about synchronicity. I may not have seen a book on menopause, but I was actually watching the sushi movie last night on Netflix. It's pretty good, but I began to feel a little resentful towards the chef. He's a purist along the lines of Seinfeld's soup Nazi. There's no alcohol served, no takeout. You have to sit sober in front of the guy in his tiny sushi bar. I got the impression that if you're not sufficiently appreciative of his deliciousness of the sushi, he might brandish his sushi knife and yell at you to get out. Not my cup of tea. Well, I know it's a movie. You don't actually have to go there. Just a reminder, let's not forget about the empty chair diatribe by Cool Hand Luke. Not sure I know what that is. Say nothing. Third grand jury resister jailed for refusing to testify in Ninth Circuit investigation of Pacific Northwest activists. Interesting. Gotta find out what is going on with that stuff. Bush and Chains, last I am of the day, and then we'll also do that Netanyahu story. Catholic kangaroo court holds a one-of-a-kind trial of Pope's whistleblower butler. U.S. envoy to skips Netanyahu speech to have lunch. That's awesome. So, Bibi Netanyahu went in front of the United Nations. Now, this is, you'll be able to hear this speech, but you should also know what he will be showing. He will be showing a drawing, and it was done. I don't think it was done freehand. It seemed to be a graphic piece.
It's like clip art.
It was clip art. And I kid you not, of a bomb, like an old-timey cartoon bomb.
Like Wile E. Coyote status.
Yeah, round black bomb with a wick. And here he is bringing it out in front of a speech of the UN to make a case that Iran is on the verge of building some type of nuclear bomb. Here we go.
So how much enriched uranium do you need for a bomb? And how close is Iran to getting it? Well, let me show you.
Yeah, here he's picking out
a diagram for you.
Is it, now pause it for a second. Now, I'm not sure this actually constitutes as a diagram. This is a cartoon picture of a bomb with the words stage one, stage two, final stage, and percentages written on it. So I don't know if it's really a diagram. It's really more of like a cartoon.
Here's a diagram.
Cartoon.
This is a bomb. This is a fuse.
Now, you should know, folks, that despite the diagram that Netanyahu brings out here, okay, the bomb that we're afraid they're going to develop doesn't have a fuse on it. You don't have to light it and have it go poof. That's not the way it works. But because he wants people who are not very bright, who have basically the mental capacity of seven-year-olds to buy into this argument. In other words, conservative voters in the United States. He puts a wick on it. Because that's what they're used to.
Nuclear plans to build a bomb. This bomb has to be filled with enough enriched uranium. And Iran has to go through three stages. The first stage, they have to enrich enough low-enriched uranium.
All right, forget it. We don't even need to see this anymore or listen to it. But the fact of the matter is that his argument is that they're in the final stage of building a bomb. And just a reminder, just a little reminder here, we have here a list of the times that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been warning us of this. Back when Benjamin Netanyahu, was a member of the Israeli parliament, he predicted that Iran was 3 to 5 years from having a nuclear weapon, or as he might say, a bomb. And that was in, 1992. In 1992, the Israeli Foreign Minister, Shimon Peres, predicts an Iranian nuclear warhead by 1999. In 1995, the New York Times quotes a U.S. and Israeli official saying that Iran would have the bomb by the year 2000. In 1998, Donald Rumsfeld told Congress that Iran would have intercontinental ballistic missile that could hit the U.S. by 2003. In other words, there's a really good reason not to believe Benjamin Netanyahu, even though he has a cartoon clip art picture of a bomb. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to have to... do I have this story? Okay, here it is. Ladies and gentlemen, let's finish the week with this. A Bloomberg national poll came out late on Wednesday, and George Bush is receiving a favorable rating of 46% of those people surveyed and an unfavorable rating of 49%. That is a what they call a negative three favorability rating. However, Mitt Romney has a 43% favorable rating and a 50% unfavorable rating. That's a negative seven. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Mitt Romney is actually less popular than George Bush. You know, George Bush is sitting there going, see, told you, history. I was waiting for history to catch up. And I didn't even have to wait to history. I could just wait until Mitt Romney ran. Where is that guy? Oh, here we go. So, mission accomplished. More popular than the Republican nominee for presidency. How about them apples? Huh? That's all you gotta do. Lay low, have a couple of heinies, and wait for history to catch up with you. Popular once again. Zoom. All right, folks. That's our Friday. Should we do one more? I am.
What about those Freebie Friday songs too?
Oh gosh,
we got a lot today.
All right, well, folks. Turns out this was a Freebie Friday. Play the Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Yeehaw! It's a Freebie Friday! Alright! There's gold in this here podcast for sure. Unlike the other days, casual Friday's not a bore. I'm just saying there's something about a Freebie Friday. And with the Reefer Cake songs, it sort of feels like my day. Freebie Friday is the day for the freeloaders. I promise to become a member when I'm older. Freebie Friday. Yee-hoo. Freebie Friday.
There you go. I don't know if I like the part about the implication that the rest of the show is boring. I don't know what I don't know what that's about. And we also got something from...
Something.
From Jermo. I don't know if we can play the whole thing, but we can play we're going to play this sting that we've developed from it.
It's a Freebie Friday! So sign up today!
So sign up today!
So sign up today!
So sign up today!
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. All right, on Monday, we'll be talking to Eugene Jaraki about his new documentary What is it called? It's about the drug war. It'll be fascinating. All right, see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive.